Welcome to the Campfire Committee, Outside and Fireside, a podcast to explore and discover the joy of camping and being in the great outdoors.
I'm Allison Logan.
And I'm Steph Pavan. We're your hosts.
This season, we're stepping up our camping game and going beyond the basics. Whether you're an expert camper or you're new to all of this, we're creating a camping community to share the many lessons and stories, tips and tricks, and all the fun that comes with getting outside and fireside.
We're bringing you into the world of camping and inviting you to join the Campfire Committee community. Remember to download, subscribe, and follow us on social at the Campfire Committee so you don't miss an episode or any new fun bits.
This podcast is about camping, and though we camp primarily in Ontario, we would like to recognize the Indigenous past, present, and future with a land acknowledgement for Toronto, where we live and make this podcast.
We recognize that we are on the traditional territory of many nations, including the Mississaugas of the Credit, the Anishinaabeg, the Chippewa, the Haudenosaunee, and the Wendat peoples, and this city is now home to many diverse First Nations, Inuit, and Métis people.
We also acknowledge that Toronto is covered by Treaty 13, signed by the Mississaugas of the Credit, and the Williams Treaty, signed with multiple Mississaugas and Chippewa bands.
We always aim to grow our understanding of and respect for the diverse First Nations, Inuit, and Métis people in Toronto, Ontario, and Canada. And we seek to forge better relationships and celebrate this land with those whom have historically called this place their home as we visit these places to camp. And we encourage our listeners to do the same.
Now, let's light this campfire.
This episode is one of our most specific yet. We're tackling the topic of tents.
You invested in a new upgraded tent pretty recently, didn't you, Steph? Wasn't that only last year?
Yeah, I did. And it was only last year, though it feels like a lifetime ago at that outdoor show.
Oh, yeah.
Pre-COVID. I can't imagine when something like that will happen again.
You're so right. That jam-packed event would be unheard of now. Just over a year afterwards.
I know. Anyways, having not upgraded any of the pieces of equipment I'd purchased for camping since declaring myself a lifelong camper, this search was fun. I spent years detouring through the tent aisle at outdoor stores or intentionally walking past enviable campsites, always adding to my mental wish list. When the time came to buy a new tent, I was ready and quite focused. And now, with a full season under my new tent's belt, I have ultimately been thrilled with my tent selection. I'll touch on some of my deciding factors throughout this intense tent talk. As I researched for this episode, I realized just how vast the world of tents is and traveled very far down that rabbit hole. But for all intents and purposes, this episode is intended to help you trek through these woods and understand the features tents can have so that you know more before you take a tent into the wild.
I'm just going to go now. Like, oh dear.
I'm sorry. I tried to get them all out in one fell swoop there. I love my little puns.
No, so do I, to be fair. But anyways, so you can make the best informed decisions on purchasing and making the most of your tent. In this episode, we want to help you make the best informed decisions on purchasing and making the most out of your tent. To start, let's review the typical tent components and features which should help listeners understand when we describe the different types of tents, setup, and the whole world of tents overall. Historically, tents were made of canvas, but nowadays, tent walls are typically made of polyester or nylon material. Some portion may be mesh, and the floor is typically more durable, waterproof material. The floor fabric may extend upwards and act as the bottom foot or so of the walls.
Doors are flaps with zippers and could include a full or partial screen layer too. Your tent may have windows, which are really just flaps that expose a screen in the tent wall. These can be essential for a cross breeze on a warm summer night. Some tents don't have windows as all the walls and ceiling are entirely mesh. This is dependent on the size of the tent fly.
The tent fly is the outermost layer of the top of a tent, and it serves as a weather protector. Covering at least the roof of the tent, it deflects water away from the tent walls and provides a solid layer over mesh portions of the tent. A good quality fly will cover your entire tent right down to the ground and provides that complete layer of water protection and allows the tent itself to breathe and maintain good ventilation in all weather. Typically, these flies have at least one pole, and they can provide a bit of a vestibule. A vestibule is an area covered by the fly that extends beyond the footprint of the tent itself and gives you a bit of a weather protection and potentially bug protection at the doors of your tent for entry and exit. These zones can be useful for gear storage, but you want to note that they don't have a floor. They may also be large enough and tall enough for chairs.
For me, the presence of a vestibule on a tent, even if only large enough for some boots, is a measure of a great tent. Unused bags and gear can stay protected in these areas and free up extra real estate inside.
Most tents have poles, and these are the most tents have poles. Okay. Most tents have poles. These are the skeletal structure of your tent and are strung together by an elastic cord and fitting into each other at an integrated sleeve in the case of aluminum poles, or a separate metal sleeve in the case of fiberglass or plastic poles to create the required length. Fly poles are typically often thinner and have fewer segments.
There are lots of tent accessories, but every tent should come with enough tent pegs for your tent and fly, as well as the guy lines.
Guy lines are the thin cords that attach to key points around your fly, helping keep the fly off the walls of the tent itself, and therefore shedding that water away from those walls. They also provide additional tie-down points that help keep your tent on the ground.
Fun fact, tents are like sails in the wind if they aren't pegged down well or heavily weighted down. Do you remember the days of setting up all the tents at the camp we worked at to air them out?
Oh, where we'd set them up in the middle of an open field during cleanup? I sure do.
If it was windy enough, we'd watch them roll across the field like giant tumbleweeds, wrangling a bunch of high school and university students during a very tight cleanup schedule was difficult enough. There were never enough tent pegs, so the tent roll was almost inevitable. I imagine the way those tents were cared for, stored, and used was horrifying to you, Al.
Yeah, just a little bit. I mean, whatever. Teenagers taking care of tents, it is what it is. Understandable at the end of the day. But camping equipment that you're going to invest in isn't something that I think should just be thrown around and not cared for. I mean, not only is it disrespectful to Mother Nature and Father Campfire, but it hugely impacts the longevity of your stuff.
My work experience there taught me everything not to do to a tent. Other tent accessories include footprints, interior walls, and shelves.
Footprints are ground sheets that go under your tent. Some tents don't require footprints and others have coordinating ones. Regardless, a ground sheet, not a tarp, underneath your tent is a great way to extend the life of it.
Interior walls are usually the same fabric as the tent walls, while shelves or pouches are sometimes mesh. Shelves may take advantage of the very top of the peak of your tent. I use mine for a small solar tent light, and believe it or not, it charges in there as well, which is great. And to keep socks away from Macy, the mini sock hunter.
Oh, she really is such a sock hunter. She'll definitely go into my tent as well just to steal them. Thank goodness for the dirty laundry bag that keeps them out of her reach.
I wonder when or if she'll grow out of that.
Yeah, no.
Though never. Her habits do help keep socks, especially the dirty ones, where they belong.
So the last things to keep an eye out for when you're getting your tent. There are the tent pegs, the guy lines, the bags for your tent, the poles and the pegs, and most often a small patch kit with some small sections of the different fabrics your tent and fly are made of.
Now that we've covered the parts of a tent, we can review the types of tents. And I don't know about you, but when I think of a tent, I automatically think of one of these guys, a dome tent.
One of the most basic versions of these tents will have two poles that cross over each other from the four corners of the tent floor, creating a rounded, square-based, domed pyramid shape. They are by far the most available and popular, ranging from 1 to 8 or more people, and this type of tent relies on the tension of the poles when that arch is created to make the structure of it.
The more Taj Mahal tent type of these tents can have large screened-in vestibules and additional rooms off one or more of the sides. Depending on your preference, these additional spaces may be necessary. However, consider the larger packed size of these tents as well, and it will definitely take a little or a lot longer to set up.
Then there are your cabin style. And just like the name suggests, they're shaped almost like a building. These tents are typically the largest style and provide the most headroom throughout the entire tent. The walls are closer to vertical, and they are most likely to include different rooms within the tent. These also pack large and heavy, and more often than not, require a group to set them up easily.
A-frame tents are a very traditional tent style, forming triangular prisms, requiring few poles. They can be lighter to pack. Their structure relies on tension, and the shape provides significantly less headroom.
Another tent type is the hammock. You can simply sleep in your traditional hammock with a tarp over top of you, or you can buy full hammock tent kits. These pack up very small and light and require much shorter poles than most tents, or no poles at all. Like a hammock, they don't touch the ground and therefore have the least ground impact. That said, they do require a place to hang it from. They can double as tents on the ground too, but you do want to note that they likely only sleep 1 to 3 people.
There's also pop-up and inflatable tents. These tents boast quick setup, but in my opinion, the positives for most of these types of tents end there. Pop-up tents typically have more breakpoints, as the poles need to automatically snap into place, especially if these are at joints. As a result, they have more hardware or poles that need to be contorted into the storing position. They store large, and both of these types of tents can be difficult to pack.
Then there are the types of tents that attach to or extend your vehicle, like car top and truck bed or hatchback tents. Car top tents sit on top of the roof of your vehicle on cargo rails and therefore have a lot of built-in structure, the most important of which is a stable floor. The top of the tent either pops up similar to a tent trailer or may require poles for setup.
A truck bed or hatchback tent is exactly what it sounds like, a tent that goes on the bed of your pickup truck or attaches to the back of a hatchback vehicle. Note, if you're using any of these types of tents, you will not be able to drive your car while they are open or in place.
True. Not necessarily something you think about right away with those either.
Though in a campground, I've definitely seen vehicles moving around with the tents on the truck bed or even on top of a little car as they're relocating from one site to another. So, yeah, you might not be able to use your... You shouldn't use your car, even if you are able to.
Finally, we've got winter tents and hot tents. These are suitable for cold weather camping. When we discuss winter camping, we'll get into all of the details of these.
For now, let's go over some of the tips and tricks we've picked up over the years.
Okay, first, the type of camping you're going to be doing will narrow down your tent selection pretty quickly. Since we are talking about car camping, any tent you can fit in or on your vehicle will work. However, consider if your tent will need to serve another purpose like backcountry when you buy it.
The number of campers a tent is suited for is based on adults sleeping on narrow sleeping pads. Emphasis on narrow.
The tent will usually provide a diagram on the suggested sleeping arrangement. There isn't usually much leftover room for gear. Some of these arrangements rely on sleeping in opposite directions, and others put one camper above or below a row of side-by-side campers. Being tall, the length of the direction I intend to sleep is a factor for sure. Switching directions might be an option in some tents, but certainly not all.
And think of pets, too. Good friends of ours had a 2-person tent and upgraded to a 3-person to accommodate their very large dog.
Keep in mind that some types of tents, especially the larger cabin style, take more than one person to set up.
I recall a trip where 3 friends were joining me after dark, so I'd offered to bring up their tent and have it set up for them. I'd set up their tent before and knew it might be challenging alone, but possible. On my first morning, after a leisurely breakfast, I decided that before heading to the beach for the afternoon, I'd better get their tent up. I pulled it out and it was considerably larger than I remembered. In fact, it was a completely new tent. Size up from 6 to 8 person cabin style.
Oopsies.
Yeah. After laughing out loud and letting my friends know how massive the tent was, I began. It wasn't easy. I've spent most of my camping setting up my tent alone and can get it and my bed up in about 15 minutes. You may never camp or set up alone, so this may not be a factor for you.
Ryan and I recently got a big 8-person tent, so we really can make ourselves at home for a few weeks this summer. But I don't know if setting it up alone is something that I'll ever do. Especially with the way you describe it, I think I'll be better off just sticking with the 2- or 4-person tent when I'm on my own.
Uh-huh.
Wasn't solo camping and setup a key factor for you when you were actually picking out your tent?
Yes, thanks for reminding me. I selected a smaller tent for this reason alone. I was comparing 2 identical tents. One was the 4-person that I wouldn't be able to stand up on inside of, or the 5-person model where I would. The second would also have a bigger footprint and space inside, but because of its height, I would also have difficulty setting it up, attaching the tent to the poles itself, and could see myself fighting with the fly. So for me, yes, me alone with my very small dog, I went for the 4-person tent.
What do you think now? Do you wish you had the 5-person?
Sometimes, but it also serves as a really good tent for backcountry because it's not so large and doesn't have that big vestibule and everything, but it does have the gear vestibules. So yeah, the size is right.
Okay.
Because if I went bigger, then I could go a lot bigger.
Right.
For another tent similar to what you guys did.
Right. No, that makes sense.
Again, though, I was investing in a higher quality tent, so I didn't want to drop a few $100 and turn what is usually a quick and easy setup into something I'd regret every time. All for a few inches of headroom. Something my old tent definitely didn't have, so it's not like I was losing something.
Right.
I still have my old tent because I've got the space for storage, and it's a bargain 4-person tent with an adjoining bug shelter. It came with 2 small chairs, too. And it was about $110, so undoubtedly, I got my money's worth. It made it through many car camping trips, housing me and my double-high twin comfortably. However, it lost its waterproofing and wasn't equipped with a full fly. I upgraded from a bargain to a higher-end tent, having jealously eyed Allison's parents' high-quality tent for years. And when I did that, I expected just that, an upgrade. And boy, is it ever.
Mm-hmm. On that note, with tents, you usually get what you pay for. Upgraded tents are considerably more expensive. However, they'll be built to last year after year, instead of a few seasons. Ryan and I have a good quality Eureka 2-man tent for backcountry and short trips, but we have actively decided not to invest in an expensive bigger tent for car camping. And really, that decision purely comes down to our camping cat, Bear. While he is generally amazing in the tent, there are definitely a couple scratches here and there from him chasing a mosquito or jumping at a squirrel on the other side of the tent wall. So for us, we know we're going to have to replace our tent every few years, and we've decided that as long as our camping cat is in our lives, we aren't going to spend hundreds of dollars. That said, I've been really happy with our more economical choices, and I've been really impressed with how well one of them stood up to a huge wind and rainstorm last summer.
Yeah, that was pretty impressive for such a big tent.
Definitely well worth the money. Lack of money, even. discount. There are many things to consider when you're setting up your tent. In our Setting Up Your Campsite episode, we'll review finding the right place for your tent. So, once you've done that, be sure to clear an area of large sticks and pine cones or stones. Some parks will have rakes hung on signposts or at outhouses for just this purpose. It's an easy step to forget, especially if you're in a race against time or the weather, but it's an important one for both you and your tent.
Yeah, those sharp objects are not only uncomfortable to sleep or step on, but they can damage the bottom of your tent. This is where a footprint or ground sheet comes in handy and will extend the life and maintain the condition of your tent.
First, you'll want to lay down the footprint or ground sheet and then align your tent over top.
Make sure you've got your doors where you'd like them.
Then pull out the poles. Pro tip, when assembling the poles of your tent, do it one piece at a time. It may be tempting to just fling them around and shake them until they all lock into place.
But it's only fun and games until someone loses an eye.
Indeed. Lay the assembled poles out on top of the tent. If your tent poles go through sleeves, be mindful to push the tent poles through the sleeves rather than pulling them through. When the poles are pulled through, you can dislodge the segments from each other and cause some damage to the cord or the poles or the tent fabric.
If your tent clips to the pole, start at one corner, connecting the corner of the tent to the end of the first pole. Then you can walk around or have another person bend the pole until you can connect the opposite corner. Do the same for the other poles, and then, don't forget, attach the apex of the roof of the tent where they cross. Lastly, clip it all into place.
For the fly, start by inserting any poles and then walk the fly over the tent with a partner if you have one, or use the poles to place the fly on top.
There are usually connection points under the fly to attach it to the tent poles. You'll have to go under the fly to connect them, so it's easiest to do these first, then connect the bottom corners.
After the tent and fly are set up, the last thing you'll do is peg it down. Before you do this, take one last look. Make sure you're pegging your tent where you intended to set it up. Start by pegging the corners of the tent itself. Begin at one corner and make your way around, pulling the tent taut from the previously secured points. Then you can peg down the fly. If your tent has a vestibule, some extend into a trapezoidal footprint over the door of the tent. Then you can peg down the fly. If your tent has a vestibule, it'll form a shape over the door of the tent. Pro tip, peg down two points at the same time so that you can avoid moving back and forth and adjusting.
Finally, peg the guy lines around the tent, making sure it's set up to shed the water.
It can be easy to create a perimeter of trip hazards around your tent, so be mindful of where you peg these guy lines. The cords should be equipped with small, usually plastic pieces with three holes. The cord weaves through each hole and a knot secures the end, and it creates an adjustable loop. Also think about tying on some reflective ribbon or even a section of pool noodle at the bottom of the guy line to try and make tripping a little less likely.
Sometimes the ground will limit where you can peg at all. For example, your entire site may be on the Canadian Shield and therefore entirely granite at or just below the surface. Some pegs might only be able to get partway into the ground.
And will bend if you keep trying to get them in. Sometimes you'll have to tie your guy lines to a tree. Sometimes they're just in the way. Some colored tape or solar lights can help here as well to prevent you from clotheslining yourself as you walk by. They can create potential hazards wherever you put them, so try and make them clearly marked. But don't just not use them because of this. They really do make a difference in keeping your tent stable and secure.
Make sure to put the bags of your tent, poles, and pegs inside your tent somewhere or somewhere easy to get to in your gear.
Now, let's talk about caring for your tent and tent repair.
There are a couple of things you should be mindful of never doing in or around your tent. Tent enemy number one, bug spray. Though bug spray might be one of those items you need to enjoy other parts of camping, to enjoy camping in your tent, keep this stuff far away.
Yep.
Bug spray will damage the waterproofing of your tent, so when you apply it, make sure you're far enough and not upwind of your tent. In my opinion, the easiest way to avoid getting unwanted bug spray on your tent is to use a pump spray bottle rather than aerosol or a cream bug repellent.
To keep bugs out of your tent, don't leave the door wide open. Close it behind you quickly on your way in and out. Another way to keep them out is to ensure that you're not attracting them in the first place.
Which brings us to the next point. Don't eat in your tent. The crumbs are an open invite to critters and can make your tent unnecessarily dirty. Same goes for brushing your teeth. Anything that you shouldn't store in your tent shouldn't be used in your tent.
There are also several things you shouldn't do to your tent, and we're stating some of these things because, yes, we have been asked.
Believe it or not.
Do not wash your tent in the washing machine. Care instructions will be supplied with your tent and can likely be found online. Follow them. When in doubt, a damp cloth and a quick wipe should do the trick without doing any damage. You can use a mild detergent and submerge your tent in a bin of water.
Do not fold your tent, or at least not entirely and not in the same direction each time you store it. It should be rolled around your poles and pegs and then put into the tent bag. This reduces creating seams that will wear more over time.
Do not store your tent wet. You may have to leave a site with a wet tent. It does happen. Morning dew and humidity count as wet in this statement.
Do dry out and air out your tent at home after each use. This is especially important if your tent was packed wet. If you don't, your tent will develop mold and mildew, smell awful, and could be unsafe to use.
Yeah. No, disgusting. So make this a habit when you return home from camping. Your gear will last longer.
Speaking of making gear last longer, repairing your tent is something that we encourage. You'll get more mileage out of it, and it takes quite a bit of damage to render a tent completely useless. Most tents, like we said, come with repair kits, though they can be purchased separately as well. Follow the directions provided with your tent or the repair kit.
Waterproofing is an essential feature of your tent, but will inevitably decrease in effectiveness or entirely over time. Re-waterproofing your fly regularly, frequency depending on how often you actually use it, will extend the longevity of your tent. The biggest downfall of new, lightweight materials that tents are made of is that they are susceptible to damage by UV rays. Setting up your tent in a shaded area or with a tarp over top of it to protect it from the sun is an important step for the long-term life of your tent.
Staying in shade is not a problem when camping in forested areas, but depending on the size or orientation of the site or even maturity of surrounding trees, sometimes being in the sun is unavoidable. Zippers also really take a beating, so take care when you use them. You can usually slide the zipper back and forth if the teeth split apart, but sometimes they need a little more tinkering.
Most minor repairs can be done yourself, but there are also repair places out there, and they're especially useful for large tears or screen repairs or those stubborn zippers and other more intense repair projects.
It's more economical and sustainable to repair your equipment, especially pieces as pricey as your tent. Camper Sue, do you have anything else on tents?
Hi, Camper Sue here, with a few words about tent selection. I personally am a Eureka fan, but not everybody wants to go to that price point to buy a tent, and that's a very personal decision. My only advice here is be careful about using candle lanterns in your tent, because that's open flame and it could just be hazardous. My other word of caution here is if you bring a tent home wet, don't think, gee, I'll put it in the freezer and keep it there until I have time to thaw it out and dry it out, because that itself doesn't really work either. It just ends up with a frozen, moldy mess of a tent. So I wouldn't recommend doing that. That's all I have for this edition.
Thanks, Sue. I definitely won't be putting my tent in the freezer anytime soon.
Top tents on many review sites are dome or dome plus style, and many are those pop-up style or quick setup. Some outdoor supply stores will recommend tents in different categories. A tent that is the best value, the best small tent, the best large tent, etc., and so on. They've got the same train of thought that we've got. There are so many products to wade through online and in store that it really depends on what you're looking for.
If you're picky or not the best visualizer, go see this tent in-store setup.
At the end of the day, when you're camping, your tent just needs to keep you out of the elements. It needs to be a good place for you to sleep.
It doesn't need to be too expensive or too large
or loaded with any extra features.
There's so much out there. Have fun exploring tents online, in-store, and at campgrounds, selecting what works best for you. Happy camping, everyone.
That's a wrap on another episode. Thanks for listening.
Don't forget to like and subscribe to the Campfire Committee, Outside and Fireside, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Remember to share this episode with others to help us expand the Campfire Committee community and pass on the love of camping and the great outdoors.
For more, check out our website, thecampfirecommittee.com, and find us on social media at The Campfire Committee.
And join our Facebook group, a place where you can share your favorite memories, places, and ideas when it comes to all things camping. Also, let us know what camping or outdoors topics you want to hear more about in future episodes, your camping stories, and any other feedback you've got.
Join us next time, Outside and Fireside.
And until then, this campfire has ended.
Before we go, we'd like to thank Sue Logan, better known around here as Camper Sue, for her endless camping knowledge, support, and experience.
And Stephen Pavan, our all-in-one editing team. We couldn't do this without either of you.
And to all the extended members of the Campfire Committee, thank you.
All sound effects that are not our own are from thedevo.net.
Music from Epidemic Sound. For more details on all episodes, see our show notes.